things really loosened up. It was 1988, baptism of Ruth, the things were really opening up. And so the second year that I was there, they allowed bell ringing. Mm. And it was just like Father said, there weren't many bells. I happened to be at the Theological Academy. But so our bells rang all day long for after Sunday.
Well, so you got to hear that.
The whole week, yeah. They basically, because they were allowed to ring the bells for the first time in, whatever, 70 years.
Yeah, wow.
Thanks for sharing. So yeah, it was really fantastic, especially since I was there before.
Right.
And then after, so it was really fantastic. Of course, now everybody has bells, so it's
yeah, there are probably, I mean, a couple hundred thousand, not a million like in 1917, but
yeah. I was remembering that the setup in San Anselmo is you're more or less horizontal to the bells, and then and the. I was remembering the series of Lord Peter Wimsey and Nine Tailors. The English bell ringers are in a vertical relationship. They have these bell notes that they're ringing. How did that evolve? Did that evolve differently, or
I don't know. I somebody just recently who was visiting our parish is an expert at English change ringing, and they were describing to me the process. And, you know, the coordination, because it's quite an art. I mean, they have to practice and practice and practice to do that. But it's built on a completely different system. It's, you know, the Russian bell ringing is basically, it's percussion. It's a percussion thing. And of course, it's about the clapper striking versus most Western bells, the bell swing. Now, with Russian bells, but I think, you know, a lot of symbolic things, you know, have their origin in something very practical. But you have a 38-ton bell. The idea of it swinging is rather frightening. Because, so let me tell you why. It's no joke. The Great Uspensky bell, which is bigger than it, I'm going to say it's 70 or 72 tons. The Great Uspensky bell in the Kremlin. And it survived, and it's what would you call it, stepsister now, which has been recast at the Lavra, is also that in weight. And I remember the Great Uspensky bell, I mentioned in the talk that suspension was a serious problem over the ages, because if you can imagine, to ring the Great Uspensky bell, you can watch it on YouTube, and I just tell me when to shut up, because this is kind of fascinating. If you can picture, it takes sometimes four people. Okay, there'll be two guys with ropes on this side of the clapper, two guys on this side, and it takes an endless time of them, like, you know, this much, that, because the clapper weighs several tons, and so. You know, you watch them work and work and work and work and get it up to the point where the tongue is called the yazyk, the clapper is called the tongue in Russian. When it first hits the sounding board and the bell rings, you realize, like, whoa, it took a lot of effort to get to that point. So bells of that magnitude, it also, when it's rung, like, at full strength, its vibrations being set into the structure of the building are very, very destructive. I mean, because that 72-ton bell of bronze, if you can't imagine, really, we cannot imagine the impact of that, because that's a bell, in fact, that's how, when I was in Russia, they said, a real blagovestnik is one that's, which is felt and not just heard. Literally, where you could actually feel its vibrations, because they affect even the person standing down. So you can imagine what they would do to buildings, but you can imagine what they might do to belfries. And so very, very elaborate suspension, what do you call it, engineering techniques were developed over the years because of hard lessons learned from bells falling and breaking. And those are stationary bells. So the idea of those magnitude bells swinging would be just unthinkable. and very impractical. To, if it took that long to just move the clapper, imagine what it would take to move the whole thing. Yeah.
They sound different at different elevations. In other words, something at 10,000 feet in elevation, up in the mountains or down here, would they sound different?
That I don't know, but I know that proximity to the ground, the ground absorbs the sound. Our bells are where they are right now really work for us because we're in a residential neighborhood, and the fact is that most of the sound is absorbed directly into the ground, and that's one of the reasons we can ring them all the time. Because we're kind of in a situation like this here. Like if we had a 72-ton bell and it was suspended, you know, say 120 feet in the air, like at the Lavra, your neighbors might not like that. Like at 3 in the morning. Especially, you know. By the way, like the Great Uspensky bell, because it's 140. That the rule was in the city of Moscow. That no parish, no monastery, no church could begin the paschal procession until the Great Uspensky bell was heard, because that was Dormition Cathedral is where the patriarch would be serving, and so what would happen would be, for most of Russia, there would be a chain reaction around throughout the Moscow diocese. Because the Great Uspensky bell could be heard, something tells me I heard the word like 17 or 18 miles. You could hear it, and so if you can imagine, you know, they heard that, then all the other bells ring, and it spread to all the outlying regions. Like you would begin literally the Paschal service when you heard the other churches ringing, like in a concentric figure out from, but it was the Great Uspensky bell that gave the signal, which is kind of a cool thing. Yeah?
Are there similar traditions in Orthodox jurisdictions of bell ringing and the significance?
I would say not developed quite to the extent, I think, for example, my wife, you know, she likes to go to thrift stores and thrift stores, and so last week she came home with, for a dollar, she bought a tape which was made by somebody homemade and then reproduced commercially in Greece of Holy Week at the Holy Sepulchre. And there's a lot of bell ringing on it from the bells of Holy Sepulchre. And the bells of Holy Sepulchre are Russian bells. A lot of the bells in the Holy Land are Russian bells. Have you been there? If you've been to the Mount of Olives Monastery, Ilion, it's got a huge Russian bell. You know, like many, many, many tons. And it's up high. By the way, if you ever get there, especially the sisters, if you ever get there, like, make sure, because they don't let everybody go up there, but they can make a fortune if they let pilgrims go up. It's the best view. They say on a perfect day, you can see all the way to the Mediterranean, in Tel Aviv with a telescope, and you could see all the way to the Negev Desert. It's really the highest point. There's a huge tower at Yelion where the bell is, but they have a huge bell there. And anyhow, there are mainly Russian bells in the Holy Land, but they, a lot of the others have imitated, the kind of the Russian stuff. But I would say the Russians kind of developed it as an art form.
When the bells ring that are that large, is there a vibration through the ground, almost like an earthquake?
That's what, I never heard the Great Uspensky bell, but I remember a story similar to Mother Serafima. When I was there in 1991, and they finally were having services in the Kremlin again, and the Patriarch was serving at Dormition Cathedral, I was staying with a priest's son who was at the Theological Academy, and he said that. He said when, because that was a big deal, again, you know, that the Great Uspensky bell rang for a church, that was something that had not happened for 70 years. And when they said that, they said, yeah, absolutely, like you could feel the vibrations in the ground, even from that, yeah. And that's in the Moscow Kremlin. But you'll find, you might be disappointed in it, by the way, because its voice, as I said, it does not have, and that's why you're not going to find many recordings. All these recordings I have, like this, you won't find it recorded when people are giving characteristics ones, because it may be the biggest, it's the most prominent one in the Kremlin, but it doesn't have, like I said, every bell has its own voice, and it just doesn't have that nice of a voice. It's big, it's loud, but you know.
Thank you.
You're welcome.